CBS News presents Report from Overseas. Today, by transcription from London, Stephen Laird reports the average British view on local and foreign affairs. Now and then, he suggests the British can cast aside their worries and concentrate on less pressing matters. And here now is Stephen Laird.
Almost everybody in Britain today is supremely concentrated on one story in the news. A typical headline over this story says, England's still there and fighting back. You might suppose the British were at war somewhere in this troubled world. But no, they're simply doing better now in their international cricket match with the Australians. The British military is in all-out operation against rebellious natives in Malaya. The Palestine fighting is on again. The crisis continues in Berlin. But foreign news doesn't interest the British man and woman in the neighborhood the way local events do. The other week, when the international tension began to mount, the London stock market surprisingly held fairly even. At that time, the trade paper, Financial Times, said that the market should, because of domestic and international strains, be taking a tumble. But fortunately, said the Financial Times, most British investors and speculators were entirely preoccupied with the annual Ascot horse race meeting. Just like you, the average man and woman in Britain is concerned not so much about Palestine and Berlin as they are about the cost of living. How to make ends meet? That's the real 64-pound question over here. Foodstuffs and manufactured goods are not moving out of the shops. People don't have enough money to buy, say the shopkeepers. Can't afford the high prices, say the people. So people turn for relief to their national favorites in the cricket matches and their international favorites in American movies. Chief cinema interest in London at the moment is the opening of Forever Amber. The critics are disappointed. They expected it to have more zip. One critic has rather testily retitled the picture Forever Ambling. As far as the public does follow the foreign news, they prefer to pass it off with a wisecrack. One of these, now going the rounds of London pubs, asks the question, will Tito eventually come in form? It's the official British who really and seriously concern themselves about the big foreign events. Above all today, with the fact that fighting has begun again in Palestine. For now that the Arab states have unilaterally refused to extend the Palestine truce, the British Foreign Office is on something of a spot. It says it has used all its influence trying to persuade the Arabs to extend the truce. The Foreign Office says it told the Arabs that a resumption of the fighting on their part might well result in the United Nations Security Council branding them as aggressors. The British say they warned the Arabs that if the truce were not extended, the United States probably would lift its arms embargo against Israel. If the British, chiefs of sponsors of the Arab case and cause, indeed gave this advice to Arab rulers, why have the Arabs disregarded it? Perhaps because the Arabs had other beliefs about British wishes in the Palestine fighting. Foreign Minister Ernest Bevin has admitted in the House of Commons that Arab propaganda recently was broadcast from a British radio station in Cyprus. 2 days ago, answering questions in the House of Commons, the British Undersecretary of Foreign Affairs, Christopher Mayhew, admitted that 12 British officers were leading Saudi Arabian forces and that 23 British officers were serving the Arab state of Transjordan. With these facts to go on, the Arabs might have felt that even if they resumed fighting, the British would give them support in the world. Consider what the London Times, perhaps Britain's most influential newspaper and with an open pipeline into the Foreign Office, has to say as fighting in Palestine begins again. Any movement now to brand the Arabs as aggressors, says the Times, would be unreal. If fighting really develops, continues the Times, a special duty rests with this country and the United States to ensure that the arms embargo is strictly enforced. In another international tinderbox, the Russians still maintain their blockade against us in Berlin. And in one sense, the British government is not altogether unhappy at the continuing crisis in Berlin. It focuses Western opinion on the trouble spot where Britain and the United States stand together against the Russians. It takes some of the headline heat off the Anglo-American split over Palestine. And it gives the British government some hope that the United States will, before too long, see its way clear to give a military guarantee to Western Europe. I'll have more to say about this further on. Meanwhile, the British today, along with the Americans and French, are awaiting some Russian reply to the 3 diplomatic notes sent to Moscow on the Berlin traffic jam. There was plenty of high diplomatic talk in London before agreement was reached on the basic wording of the 3 Western notes to the Russians. American Ambassador Lewis Douglas was so occupied by these meetings that he was unable to appear at his own official reception to mark American Independence Day. You'd think it would be simple to decide what we wanted to say to the Kremlin about Berlin, but it wasn't. At the start, the American, British, and French representatives agreed there could be no retreat from Berlin. Next, there was agreement that supplying Berlin by air will not, over any extended period of time, be enough. The Russians must restore full road, rail, and water communication between the Western zones and Berlin. But then the disagreement began. The Americans proposed a stiff 3-power protest direct to Moscow. The French didn't think too much of this. What if the Russians ignore the protest, the French asked? What are you Americans prepared to do about it? We ask, said the French, because it would humiliate and weaken the Western position in Europe if we have no effective means of backing up a strongly worded ultimatum to the Russians. The Americans replied that the United States was willing to make an unconditional stand in Berlin. The French said, good, but where are your troops? Where is your military guarantee to Western Europe? So a compromise was reached. 3 separate notes, not identically worded, but having the same general tone, would be sent to Russia. And the tone, while firm, was to be more moderate than the Americans originally intended. Earlier this week, the notes went off to Russia. Diplomatic opinion in London expects the Russian reply to accuse us once again of splitting Germany and breaking the Potsdam agreements. It's expected the Russians will suggest that the situation in Berlin might improve if we give up our plans to make Western Germany a separate concern, and if we agree to new 4-power talks covering the whole of Germany. I'm told the Western powers will not agree to any talks with Russia on either Berlin or all of Germany unless the Russians first agree to an immediate lifting of their restrictions against us in Berlin. All right then, what happens if the Russians do not agree to this? In that event, we may take the Berlin dispute to the United Nations, or we might send off 2nd notes to Moscow. In other words, a Western threat to take military measures, if necessary, to open our supply routes to Berlin. Which brings us to what has come to be called Western Union. This military and economic union so far consists of Britain, France, and the Benelux countries. They have promised each other in the Brussels Pact to coordinate their plans for defense and trade. They would like, now, to bring in the other 11 countries participating in the Marshall Aid program. And I'm told that the incipient state of Western Germany will also be asked to join. Already, German experts have been asked to submit a study along this line to a 16-nation conference in Brussels in September. But as far as economic collaboration goes between Western European nations, there just isn't very much as yet. It's hard for these nations to get over their old notion of economic competition, looking out for the home state first. If Western Europe is going to collaborate economically, it will have to be Britain and France who take the lead. Yet France has come right into Britain to take business away from this country. In London's fashionable West End, opposite the first-run movie mansions, is this sign on a spotlighted billboard. Visit France, where your money is worth more. It's in matters of joint defense that Western Union shows more signs of successful collaboration. For example, the Benelux countries were approached through their ambassadors in London to help supply food suitable for flying through the Russian blockade to Berlin. They immediately agreed to do what they could. And in much privacy, the Permanent Military Committee of Western Union has held long and fruitful meetings in London. They drew up a joint defense plan for Western Europe. The number of troops and military items needed to fill out this plan was forwarded to Washington. There, this week, exploratory discussions have begun between the Western Union countries, Canada, and the United States. The subject? What will America do to give meaning to the Vandenberg Resolution passed by the Senate in favor of support to regional military alliances like Western Union? The French are most eager for an American military commitment. As a high French source puts it to me, without an American guarantee, we consider everything about the Western European plans and Western opposition to Russia to be theoretical. The British Foreign Office today tells me we would consider an American military guarantee to Western Union a great encouragement. The British and French know this is your election year. They know about American tradition against making peacetime military commitments. But they have hope. They have the Vandenberg Resolution. They note that the odds-on Republican presidential candidate, Thomas Dewey, has said he favors a military alliance between Britain and the United States. They note that Charles Eaton, Republican chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, this week said he favors the principle of American military aid to Western powers friendly to the United States. They note that General Albert Wedemeyer, chief of the American War Department's planning staff, right now is making a quiet but thorough on-the-spot survey of the European military situation. Within a week, he'll return from Europe to Washington to make his report. At this end, Field Marshal Montgomery, chief of the British Imperial General Staff, has gone to Paris. Sources who ought to know say he's gone there for talks in connection with the Western Union military alliance. Former French Prime Minister Paul Reynaud has written a letter to a French newspaper saying Field Marshal Montgomery's visit should be the occasion of organizing a unified military command of the Brussels Pact nations. Field Marshal Montgomery himself, in a speech to the French War College yesterday afternoon, said, "It would be a bold aggressor who defied the effort of the combined nations of Western Union backed by the United States." British Foreign Minister Ernest Bevin has tried to bring the Scandinavian countries into the Western defense system. He suggested to the Scandinavian ambassadors in London that their countries, Norway, Denmark, and Sweden, make a defense pact among themselves and then attach it to Western Union. Norway and Denmark said they were willing if the United States gave a military guarantee to it. But Sweden said no. Sweden said it believes the Scandinavian countries will do better to pursue a policy of strict neutrality between the Soviet East and Democratic West. Foreign Minister Bevin also wants to bring the British Dominions into the Western Union Defense Pact. Mr. J.B. Chipley, Prime Minister of Australia, today is in London, talking about this and other Commonwealth matters. Well, America is definitely giving economic support to Western Europe. And for 2 days this week, Parliament debated whether or not this country was going to accept martial aid. For one thing, this is a free country, and Parliament likes to have a debate about anything that comes along. For another, you won't find a single person in Britain happy about taking the money. They all know it's free, they're pretty sure they couldn't do without it, and all but a cynical few think it's generous of the Americans to give it to them. But the British have their pride. And the British wanted to be sure they won't have to give up any of their independence in return for the American dollars. Sir Stafford Cripps for the Labour government said the United States were taking a step unexampled in world history, giving away vast quantities of goods for which they would have to pay. A spokesman for the Conservative Party, Mr. Oliver Littleton, said that as for the terms of the aid, America had exercised great restraint. The groaners and quibblers and honest doubters had their say at some length. Then, when the debate was ended, only 12 members of Commons voted against the martial aid agreement. Even with martial aid, it's not easy to see this week much promise or security in the immediate future of this United Kingdom. Economically, this country simply isn't a going concern. Production is coming along fine. The country's making 8% more national product than it produced in any pre-war year. But the prices these islands now get for their exports in the world market just don't add up to the prices they have to pay for their minimum imports of food and raw materials. Ends just won't meet, even with full martial aid. Without martial aid, this country would be tottering on the brink of bankruptcy right now. With martial aid, insolvency lurks impatiently just around the corner. The economic hope for Britain is more production at lower costs, more exports at higher prices, and fewer imports at lower prices. That's a lot of hope for any country, even when it's inhabited by as willing and deserving and resolute a people as the British.
You have been listening to Report from Overseas. Today, Stephen Laird spoke by transcription from London. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.